Hello and welcome to the Press Start podcast, Press Start Australia. Hello and welcome to the Press Start podcast, Press Start Australia's video game discussion podcast. I'm your host Ewan, joined by my fellow Helldivers and co-hosts Brody.
Hello.
James.
Hi.
Shannon.
Yep. Hello.
And Harry.
Hello.
I see I've confused everyone by referring you all to Helldivers. Have you guys not all bought into this, like, just insane idea that we're all in this together? Everyone on TikTok is, like, kind of
played,
pretending they're just totally
bought in.
30 minutes
of it with Shannon, and
super
that's about
Earth.
It.
I live in the real world, and I've been playing other games, so...
Yeah, I've yet to Helldive.
I'm sorry.
I felt personally attacked the other day when I saw a TikTok accosting people for going off and fighting the bugs rather than defending. Are you okay, Shannon? Is your house falling apart?
Apparently, yes.
Anyhow, yes, I'm obsessed with Helldivers, but clearly I'm the only one, and that joke has fallen flat on its face. Harry is today's special guest on the show, because he will be sharing his review of Final Fantasy VII Rebirth, but today we're also going to be talking about the Nintendo Direct Partner Showcase, Microsoft confirming the four games destined for the consoles, the Elden Ring expansion getting a release date, and the PS5 Pro potentially launching this year, according to analysts. I say that, but that's not at all what I have planned for today's show. I've clearly confused my notes versus what I actually decided we were going to talk about.
None of that will be talked about.
I think the PlayStation coming out this year, maybe we won't get to that. But let's start with the Final Fantasy Rebirth review. Harry, you have played the game. Overall, how did you rate it?
I scored it 9.
Nice.
9, yeah.
Why? What brought you to that score?
I think in comparison to Remake... it's probably at the same level, maybe a bit better. It's a very different game, which isn't a bad thing. It's like entirely different in the way that it approaches sort of its world design and the general structure of it. If you haven't played the original, the point at which Rebirth takes off is when the party gets to like the overworld of Final Fantasy VII. So that's sort of the approach that they take here with Rebirth. A lot of what happens in the original, or the order of the events, is the same. There's a couple exceptions, but in broad strokes it's pretty similar. But yeah, I think it does a lot of what Remake did really well, and builds on it. I think it's most diverged in sort of its narrative and stuff. The combat is very similar if you played Remake's expansion, which is Intermission. But yeah, all round I think Final Fantasy fans are going to love it, especially if you're a big fan of 7.
I think you've kind of touched on it a bit there, but how does it build on the original Final Fantasy 7, but then I suppose also like everything new that they introduced in Remake as well?
This Remake trilogy is interesting in that it's sort of a pseudo sequel to the 97 original. So like at the end of the events of the last game, you know, the boss is like the Arbiters of Fate or whatever, and they effectively break out of the constraints of the story of the original, which basically means that Rebirth is the same, but it's also different. It really does toy with your expectations and your memories of the original game. There are characters that are around that shouldn't be. There are places that you go to that you don't in the original. There are narrative events that unfold that don't happen in the original. And they also use that opportunity to further build up some elements of the original that probably weren't as thoroughly explained as other parts of it are. To talk about what that is specifically would be a pretty big spoiler, but they use it to, I think, a pretty good effect. And then a lot of like the gameplay structure changes come in the open world stuff. So there are still those more linear sections that you had in Remake. But between those, or rather these are between the open world sections. So the game is split into 6 regions, and each one is like packed with optional open world side content that you can do, which all sort of tie into like the broader themes of environmental conservation and stuff that 7 was already all about. But they also really double down on the narrative and the conflict with Sephiroth, and how the party deals with that.
I want to ask a question. So I actually enjoyed 7 when I played it at a few events, but I never got around to playing it just because I knew I wouldn't finish it. If someone didn't play, was it just called Remake? I can't even remember now.
Yeah, like, would they, Remake, yeah.
Could they play this and enjoy it without playing the last one?
Yeah, I definitely think you can. You wouldn't get as much out of it. Like, it's a definitive middle chapter. I'm pretty sure there was a recap that you could go through if you wanted to. If there was, I opted not to. But this is very much a middle chapter. It jumps... The point at which it jumps off, it already assumes that you know what's going on. There's very little time recounting those events. And I also think that the way that they sort of, like, propose the way that they're adapting this story... lends itself better to players who have played the first part of the remake and sort of understand what it is they're trying to do.
Yeah.
But if you're not too stressed about that, you definitely can just jump in and you'll still enjoy it at the very least.
I watched the official recap going into the demo that they released, and that's actually built into the demo. Like, it's an official PlayStation recap. I don't know if it's in, like, the full release of the game.
I think it is. I've been playing for a while now, but I'm pretty sure at the start it did ask me if I wanted a summary of the events, and I just said no. So.
Yeah, it's only like a 3-minute long video. No, it's literally just 3 minutes, and I think, like, very succinctly sums up the game to the extent where a bit like, geez, I really spent like 60 hours digesting this story that they actually pretty neatly surmised in just 3 minutes there.
So what you're telling me is just wait for all three and then just watch a 9-minute recap.
I reckon I came away from the recap understanding the events of the first game better. Like, the whole, like, oh, we were fighting fate all along. Like, that didn't really, like, hit home for me in the moment, I don't think. I was very confused as to what was going on.
I also think that this is, like, one of the issues with the remake's approach, and I don't know if Harry agrees or not, but, like, somebody like Ewan, who is...
Yeah.
Like, very...
An idiot.
Actually, no, I'm not going to say what I finished that sentence, but someone like Ewan, who the didn't say the original...
came out.
Yeah, literally. Can't really understand, like, when obviously the end of Remake, Harry, right, like with the Zack stuff, like, I don't think anybody can really comprehend that if they haven't played the original.
No, which is definitely not.
Yeah, like, whereas, like, say you look at, say, other remakes and they're pretty much definitive versions of those games,
and there's more of that in this game as well. Yeah, like,
that's the question I was gonna ask, is, like, does it diverge, continue to diverge as much?
I think that, like, you really you don't need to, but I like playing Crisis Core, for example. Like, there's absolutely the reason that Square did Crisis Core Reunion, which is the Crisis Core remake, is because they wanted people to play it before this game. Like, Zack is in Rebirth. Again, if you haven't played the original, Zack is dead, like, well before the events of the original start. He dies at the end of Crisis Core, spoiler, but he is alive in Rebirth for reasons, and he plays a pretty big part in the story, and I think, like, this remake trilogy is, like, more than anyone made for the people who play the original, like, really appreciate the whole FF7 anthology. I also think you can appreciate it from the perspective of being a complete newcomer, but there are definitely going to be things that go over your head, and there are going to be things that you probably won't appreciate as much or get confused by because you don't know what's different.
I think, though, if you don't I'm know, conscious, right, like, it's still enjoyable. Like,
absolutely, know. Absolutely. Yeah. It still tells a, like, not a self-contained narrative, but a narrative that you can play from start to finish and enjoy and understand for the most part.
Yeah. I still really enjoyed it. Like, it was one of my favorite games the year that it came out, and I, like, did get invested in the story, but I do feel like there were all of these moments where they were kind of going, oh, look, fans of Final Fantasy VII, we're doing something different here, and I had zero context for, like, what was new about it. I was just kind of flying blind. Like, a prime example of that, and I shared this clip with James this past week, because it was very similar to the reaction I had, but the kind of funny guys were, like, have been streaming the game, and there's this clip on TikTok of Snowbike Mike seeing the cat in the crown, going, what the fuck is that? Yeah. And that was exactly me in that moment, just, like, inexplicably, there's, like, this talking humanoid cat. So the moments like that, I just had no idea what was going on. But, like, the combat, which we haven't really touched on, I found super engrossing. I got the gist from the demo that that's very much the same this time around as well, right?
Just one more thing that I'll touch on with story, like coming back to what Shannon said about playing the original. I think the original Final Fantasy and also this trilogy hasn't really lost sight of it. But 7 is a very party-focused game. Like, especially the core group, like Barret, Aerith, Tifa, and Cloud. There's a lot of things in the original game that like really fleshes them out and develops them as characters. And because this remake has been broken up into three parts, those arcs have been broken up into three parts. So there are things in Rebirth that sort of assume you already know the context of what happened in Remake. Barret in particular has like a whole chapter dedicated to some character stuff that he has that sort of goes into his hatred for Shinra. And I think to fully appreciate that, like, you need to see what he's like in Remake, because he's pretty... Right. He's a different guy in that game in comparison to this game, so...
Why is it split into three? Is it a money thing? Like, is it a time thing? Like, it just doesn't strike me as the type of game
to Kieran that I think that, like, if you were... I mean, there are always going to be people who are going to detract from Square and say that it was a money-grabbing tactic, which... You can think what you want about it. In my opinion, I think if you were of that and you aren't already convinced of it, and you can be, this game will be the game to sort of tide you over. Like, it's utterly absurd how large this game is. And there's very, very few... a very small part of it feels like bloat. And I don't see how they could have remade the entire game in the capacity that they have with these two games in like one package. I think this game on its own is like 40-50 hours.
Okay.
Did you feel that the first game was drawn out a bit at all? I felt like the first part especially was really, there was so many unnecessarily drawn out bits, and obviously the big one is like the Harry Potter train yard section, like in the first game, but I feel like this middle part is the part that would sell me on the fact that they've split it up. Like, I wasn't convinced for Remake. Like, I thought it was really unnecessary. But this
way less rapid fire. In that, like, you spend more time in each of these towns, and you sort of understand the conflicts that they're going through and how they fit into the characters' pasts. And also, I think a lot of the, like, I put my first playthrough, I finished at about 100 hours, but I did almost everything. If you just mainline the story and you sort of ignore the open world stuff, you can get through it in like 30 to 40 hours, which, considering how many places the party goes to, in terms of like, I mean, there's six regions. Each region has two or three towns. The Golden Saucer, like, there's no Midgar in this game at all. I don't think that... it depends on what you feel is slowed down, but they spend a lot more time with the characters here. And then they sort of interweave that into the broader plot with Sephiroth and his plan.
Where does this end?
It ends at the
Forgotten... Not like Final Fantasy of the franchise. Like,
yeah. This portion of the remake. It ends at the Forgotten Capital, which is sort of, in the original game, it's about the two-thirds mark.
Ewan is completely unaware of, like, the big moment, right?
Which someone did tweet out.
That is in this part. That is the end of this game.
Still haven't seen it.
Ewan gets to see what this part is.
I get the big, like, Luke, I am your father moment.
Yeah. Mm.
Nice.
That's at the very end of the game. Yeah.
I think it's, like, so impressive that somebody can be completely... ignorant.
I swear to God, if the comments on this episode are now spoiling this for me, I'm gonna be so pissed.
It is the I am your father moment of gaming as well. That's the thing, right?
Is like, it's like one of the most famous things in games. Yeah. But
it blows my mind. I've never had
it. Feels like such a natural cutoff point as well. Like, the way that the game ends feels really poignant. And it sets up part three quite nicely without being too cliffhangery. Of course there's only so much you can do in that regard. But it does feel like a good point to sort of say, okay, this is where we're ending this bit, and the last part is going to have a definitive focus on that last set of the story. So, yeah.
Damn, I was like kind of coming out of it going like, oh, God, 100 hours, really? But if I can kind of just take or leave like side mission sort of stuff and just like power through the story, 30, 40 hours, I can definitely do.
I reckon if you just did the main story, it's probably around the same length as Remake, maybe a bit longer.
Yeah, cool. And I got through 16 last year. I kind of just like kept going back to 16 throughout the year and playing in bits and pieces. And I probably got through that in about 50 hours or so, something like that.
Yeah, I also think like the way that this game like sort of introduces its core mystery and like the narrative hook is overall much better than the way Remake sort of keeps you playing. You want to know what's happening. Like, you want to know the answers to the questions that the game poses in its opening few hours, which the demo covers. I think it does a good job of like, it drip feeds you info, but also gives you good character stuff at the same time and builds the world up.
Yeah, cool. I think I can see myself engaging with that a little bit, but it would kind of like, can you like, once you've done an area and moved on, can you revisit it later and revisit some of that side mission, or is it kind of gated?
So it's pretty flexible in that regard. The first area, so the game starts with the Nibelheim flashback, which is the demo that released. And then after that, the party's in Calm, which is like the first town they go to after they leave Midgar. And they end up having to evacuate Calm because Shimmer attacks. And then you're in the Grasslands, which is like the first open world region. And you can, there's a few things you have to do in the Grasslands before you can move on. But once you do, you go through the Mithril Mines. And once you come out of that, you're in the Junom region. And at a certain point during your time in the Junom region, the game will say, hey, you can go back to the Grasslands now if you want. And that sort of happens as you move through each region. You'll move on with like a linear section. And then as you get introduced to the new region, the game will say, okay, now you can go back to the previous one. By the time you get to the end of the game, you pretty well have like, you can fast travel wherever you want. Like the last two chapters, you can just fast travel at will to go and clear up the stuff that you missed, or if you want to go back to it. So, yeah.
Nice. Okay. I'm keen. I feel like I'm gonna have to like stream the ending again for James so he can see my reaction in real time.
Yeah, I truly can't believe that you don't already know.
Session for us.
All 50 hours.
Yeah, yeah.
I was like, I had Ewan on my pick. Oh, actually, don't worry, it's fine. I'm suspicious but keen.
It's long. Like the combat does a great job of keeping things like fresh, like Remake's combat. If you liked it there, you'll like it here.
Yeah, I still prefer it to whatever 16. Like,
yeah, it's a fantastic framework. It's so good. It's really pushed to its limits here in a lot of ways. There's a lot of combat simulations that are really, really hard. And even playing through on hard mode again, which returns from Remake, you have to engage with it more creatively than you normally would. It's never not a joy to engage with bosses and the overworld combat encounters, and the new characters that you can play as well, like Yuffie's here from the Intermission DLC. Then you have Red 13 and Kate Sith as well, who are both really fun to play as. So, yeah.
I'm telling you now, I'm going to put this game on like the easiest setting and just try and power strength through.
There is actually a new difficulty called Dynamic, which it like tunes to your skill level.
Yeah. Yeah, cool. I genuinely might give that a go. I'm curious to see how that works. Brody, I'm conscious you haven't had a chance to get a word in. Are you excited for Final Fantasy VII Rebirth at all?
I'm just excited for you guys. Yeah. No, not for me. Not for me.
I don't know where you come down on Elden Ring, but I'm going to jump to that next and Shadow of the Retreat. I'm judging by the look on your face. You're not excited.
It's a great episode for Harry.
Another one. Great episode for Harry. Harry and James show. In case you missed it, yesterday a trailer came out. I'm saying yesterday because we're recording this podcast in advance. It's coming June 21st and sounds rather sizable by all things. James, I might come to you first. Because I know Elden Ring was kind of your jam, I think, kind of as much to your surprise as anyone else's. Am I not remembering that correctly?
I think he was expecting to like it.
Anyhow, you're not a big Souls guy. I'll back
you up. Yeah, I didn't think you were. I don't fist myself to it every day,
but I enjoy them. Every time.
I didn't think you were a big Souls guy, and then you played Elden Ring, you're like, this game blew me away.
It got me in. I couldn't stop playing it for a long time, but I like all FromSoft games. I just don't base my entire online presence / identity around it like a lot of people like to do. So
that said, then, where did you come down on the Shadow of Erdtree gameplay reveal?
Yeah, it looks good. after all that. No, I you can feel that it is definitely like the biggest and most ambitious expansion as well, I think. And I think that a lot of eyes are on it more so, and they kind of knew that. I feel like they're definitely...
Yeah.
It just feels like more of an event than, say, all the other DLCs for Dark Souls and stuff. So, yeah, great times for all.
It looks the same to me. Like, what stands out from this trailer?
Oh, my God. There's like,
it's like new environments, whole back
there's
bunch
like
of new
trees
bosses.
With curtains on them and stuff. Like, it's just, there's something for everyone. Fabrics, lots of beautiful gowns, fabrics. Like,
this big wormy thing's cool.
Yeah, cool. Are you watching the Dune trailer or are you watching by accident? Yeah, I gotta be honest, like, I'm not gonna go into the lore and shit, but like, I think like it does look good, and I recognize maybe it looks the same as Elden Ring, but I mean, it's a DLC for Elden Ring, so that makes sense to me. At least they're consistent. Like, what do you want it to look like, Shannon? You know,
I don't know. Some flying, some... I don't know. I don't
flying.
Know.
Just flying become up. A witch now. Speaking of kind of witch stuff, not really, but you can kick things now. That looks pretty cool. You can, like, you know... I'm sure Harry can explain all of this trailer better than me, but no one else is speaking, so I just keep speaking. But, yeah, anyway.
Yeah, Harry, no doubt you're very excited for this DLC as well, and as many kind of new bosses and new locations. Apparently it's the size of Limgrave, which means nothing to me really, but I hear people are excited about that. Are you excited about that too?
Yeah, it looks fantastic. Like, to echo what James said, I'm not going to get into lore stuff, but the narrative prospects of it are very fascinating. Like, if you are familiar with the world and the characters, like, the direction that they seem to be taking it is very, very cool. Sort of like this unexplored segment in the original game that everyone has questions about. But yeah, like, new weapons. I mean, you can throw hands now properly, which you could in previous games, but now you can in Elden Ring. Like, a whole new environment, and the fact that it's the size of Limgrave is pretty absurd, because Limgrave is huge if you do everything. But yeah, like, I think FromSoft, when they did this with Bloodborne, they had two expansions planned and amalgamated it into one, and that was $40, and this is $60. So, like,
yeah.
I'm sure that it will deliver. I'm very excited to see the scale of it and sort of the ideas that they bring with it.
Are you getting the more 500 more Elden Ring and something dollar collector?
No, I was going to. I saw the collectors and I was like, damn, that's a cool statue. And then I saw the price point and that was a problem.
I had to look it up. The original was like $380. How
exactly.
Fuck is that?
Which I don't,
like,
know why.
That's lots of inflation.
Not good.
Real Elden inflation, if you ask me.
But yeah, I'm excited. It looks great. Yeah.
And if I'm not mistaken as well, like, the new area that they've added to the game, like, you kind of spawn to it, right? Like, you teleport to it in some fashion. It's not
you
like
will
they've
do,
added
yeah.
an island or, yeah.
That's cool. Typically how they do it in FromSoft games. Like, there's conditions you need to hit. And based on, like, the narrative context of this DLC, like, I think people already know how we're going to access it. Yeah, it'll be, like, its own sort of thing. But I think they said you can freely move between... the lands between, and I think it's called the Land of Shadows or something. You can freely move between them once you go there, so that's cool.
Yeah, it's very cool. I'm looking at the Elden Ring map now. I'm not ignoring you. I'm trying to, like, get an idea of what Limgrave was. Like,
Limgrave is like the starting area.
Yeah, okay. I wondered if it was the starting area. Okay, I do have context for how big that is then, because I at least made it that far into the game.
Yeah.
I keep flirting with the idea of returning to Elden Ring, because there was like there's like a mod I think you can get on PC that, like, adds kind of seamless co-op to it.
That mod is fantastic.
I thought playing through it that way would be a lot of fun, but I just haven't found the time nor the energy to revisit it yet. Anyhow, let's move on and talk about the Nintendo Direct Partner Showcase that happened yesterday as well. A stack of games were announced as part of the showcase, including some of the Xbox games destined for other platforms, which I will come back to in a moment as well. But let's start with the Nintendo announcements. And Shannon, let me come to you first. Which of the announcements stood out to you, if any?
I thought it was a decent showcase. I think for me, Epic Mickey Rebrushed. I don't even know what it's called. Is that what it's called? Rebrushed? Brushed?
It is
again.
Yeah, I think.
Yeah. Brushed again. Epic Mickey Brushed again.
It looks good. I was like, I had to double check because it was like a 5-minute announced trailer that looked just to be all cutscene. Again, I can't really remember Epic Mickey too much, but like it looks really nice. A lot of people love that game. So I'm really keen to see it back again. I don't know if too many people expected that. But yeah, it was a good showcase. I won't steal any of the other games there, because I'll let Brody speak.
Thanks. Yeah, I obviously didn't get to watch it, but reading through the recap that's on the site, there's clearly a lot of stuff that popped up. Cool to see some more Rare games coming to Nintendo Switch Online. That's always cool. But I liked a lot of games we knew about, but they're getting dates for this like first half of the year, so it's really starting to fill out. Like Another Crab's Treasure, like that's a really cool game that I'm looking forward to, as well as Pepper Grinder. So good that they've got like March and April dates, not respectively, but flipped around. Yeah, so cool to get a lot of dates for these little indies. And aside from that, yeah, obviously I'm sure we'll talk about the Xbox stuff, but
yeah,
obviously cool that that's coming across, or a couple of them.
Yeah, I...
Super Monkey Ball, I'm going to call that just quickly as well before it gets passed over. Love a game with monkeys.
He is a monkey fan.
Big fan of that.
Yeah. A monkey man.
looks cool.
The one I'm most excited for, which may come as no surprise to anyone, is the Battlefront remasters. I was stoked to see those announced. That was like a nice little surprise. I don't know if there was like any indication this is happening, but like there seems to be a bit of a push to kind of remaster classic Star Wars games. And I guess inevitably you'd hope to see Battlefront, and specifically Battlefront 2, getting remastered. But that like game holds such a special place in my heart, because it was like just so typical of like going to your mate's place, at least for me, after primary school and playing that for just hours on the PS2. And it's, yeah, for it to be coming back with local multiplayer matches still a thing, but 64 player online battles as well, is awesome. And that's not just coming to the Switch, obviously, but PlayStation, Xbox, and PC as well. And very soon, March 14th.
Very soon.
So yeah, I'm definitely going to be trying to assemble a bit of a battalion, I think, for that. James, what about yourself?
Yeah, like I thought it was overall pretty good as well. I liked Epic Mickey as well. I also like the crab game. I'm just quickly scrolling through it, and I don't think
the monsters are back.
They are back. Shin Megami Tensei 5 is like kind of annoying. I know I finished it and reviewed it 3 years ago, but like I just don't know if, why should you buy an Atlus game for the first time now? Like I feel like every game they do, they put out like a better version with no proper system transfer like 3 years later. Do you know what I mean? But I'm excited for that game to not be on Switch. And I know that probably sounds really bad given we're talking about the Direct, but when I played it for review, the performance issues were like quite horrendous. So it's kind of nice to see a game from that team do well on the better consoles. So, yeah.
Speaking of like surprising things to come back, I was amazed to hear World of Goo like being back in the news cycle. I mean, I don't know anything about this game, but
everyone seems to like, have that sentiment. Like, I know, I always saw it, but
yeah,
I kind of said this when it was at the Game Awards or something, wasn't it? Like, we were shocked that it was like the first like indie game on Nintendo Online and stuff. Like, I remember it as like the probably
It was 2008. Like, that's wild.
Yeah, I seem to remember it being like one of those games that was just like always on the homepage of like downloadable stores. Like back in the day, it was just like that earlier mover, I guess, in that sort of space.
Yeah.
But I literally have not thought about it since. So yeah, I was just kind of taken a bit aback by that. But
I don't know about
it looks
that.
Cool. Harry, what about yourself? Was there anything that stood out to you that that we haven't mentioned before we move on?
Yeah, I'm glad
to
that
Xbox stuff?
Monster Hunter Stories is breaking free of its 3DS and mobile chains, because that's a fantastic little game that I don't think many people have played. Unicorn Overlord getting a demo is really cool. Vanillaware, I think their last game was 13 Sentinels, which was a long time ago now. So I'm really keen to see what Unicorn Overlord is like. And yeah, to jump on what James said, Shin Megami Tensei 5 Vengeance, I'm looking forward to that. I did really like Shin Megami Tensei 5 from like a gameplay perspective, but the narrative didn't do much for me, so to see them have like a whole new narrative route is very appealing. Even though I've already played the game, I'm hoping that it can sort of remedy some of the issues that I had with the original. So yeah,
Yeah, well, we've mentioned a bunch there, but do check out the full wrap-up on the site that's got all of the trailers, including one for Snufkin, Melody of Moomin Valley, which sounds like a game that my mum would lap up because she's a big Moomin fan. But enough about that. Let's talk about these Xbox games that were... What's a Moomin? It's like a little cartoon character. I think it was like from a comic or something.
Am I meant to know this? Is this...
It's common knowledge. I don't know if it was a big thing in Australia, but I think it was popular in Scotland, popular in the UK. Moomin. I don't know. Yeah, it's a cute little, like, almost hippo looking character.
It's a Dutch, Japanese, Finnish anime. What?
Yeah. Yeah, so it's a comic strip by a Finnish writer and illustrator. There you go.
Oh, I know these people. The little hippo with the knife in the meme. Yeah, okay. Wow, I've learnt.
Microsoft has announced the four games that are coming to PlayStation. They are, as speculated, Pentiment, Hi-Fi Rush, Grounded, and Sea of Thieves, exactly as Brody and James and I were talking about in last week's episode. Pentiment is out today. Hi-Fi Rush is coming out March 19th. Grounded is out April 16th, and Sea of Thieves April 30th. So kind of all over the space of the next 2 months or so, these games are coming out. Brody, let's come to you first. How do you expect these games to be received on PlayStation platforms? And I should mention Switch is going to be a release for a couple of these as well.
Yeah, what is it? Pentiment and Grounded coming to Switch? Look, I think it really depends. I've already seen more marketing for a couple of them than I ever saw on Xbox, so I think that's probably already a good thing for, games like Pentiment and, like, Hi-Fi Rush, for example. Hi-Fi Rush obviously got a push, but obviously limited run now are going to be doing, like, physical releases and stuff, which I think is really cool. Yeah. I'm definitely going to be all over the Pentiment one for that. I think they could do well. There's definitely been a lot of fervor, I think, surprisingly, in the past. I was surprised to see that video that Rare put up where everyone seemed to be asking for Sea of Thieves to go to PlayStation, because I did not ever understand that to be the sentiment, but evidently it was there. So, look, if that's going to, you know, feed that playing group to make it a bit more, I don't know, a bigger community is a good thing, I suppose. So, that's good. I think Pentiment is a great game. I've already told... I've been telling everyone that, if it comes to your platform, play it, because that was, like, my game of the year for 2022. I loved it so much. And Grounded, similar to Sea of Thieves, I think that's going to benefit from more players as well. So, I expect these to do pretty well. I don't know if it'll wrestle too many people away from Helldivers, but maybe it'll have had its moment by that point and people will be on to the next thing. So, we will see.
Mm.
How do you feel about it? Oh, sorry, go, Shan.
I think Sea of Thieves will do really well, just because I can see that taking off on sort of TikTok and going viral. I think Grounded as well could, like, catch fire in that kind of way. I still think Pentiment is a harder sell, and I was really shocked that it was, like, a footnote in the direct among a bunch of other games in a sizzle reel. Like, I thought that with how Xbox sort of didn't want to talk about it last week, that it would have maybe had a bigger moment. I also don't know. I guess, like, I can see merit in announcing them all at the same time, but I don't know if that, in the way that it happened, with a few being in the direct and then a few just being popped out in other ways, I don't know if that also was a great way to do it. But I can see all these games doing okay. Like, Hi-Fi Rush, like, already has that sort of wow factor. Like, people know about it, and if you don't have an Xbox or a PC, like, you'll be grabbing it on PlayStation and Switch when it comes there eventually, I assume. But yeah, I think it's a good group of games to sort of test and learn. If that is their strategy, which they said it is, we'll get a good idea of how these go. They're all quite different.
I did like that PlayStation, pretty much after the announcement, just tweeted about Skull and Bones. So it's just like, we've already got a pirate game, don't worry about it. I think it's crazy that, apparently, and I suppose this makes sense, but Sea of Thieves is going to be like Rare's first game in 39 years in their whole history that's going to be on PlayStation. So that's that's pretty cool.
Sea of Thieves is a fantastic game. I really do hope people get around it on PlayStation. Like,
me and Shannon had a great time with it.
Yeah, I feel like it's kind of coming out at a difficult time, or maybe you could argue it's the right sort of time. Like, maybe
is there prices yet for like that? Like for these games, but Sea of Thieves in particular. If it's like $100, no. It's a tough sell, I think.
I think Sea of Thieves
for a bunch of these now.
though. I'm just double checking. I think Sea of Thieves is good, though, because I feel like... I mean, I reviewed it, and I scored it quite low. Because at the time, it was, like, not hot. Yeah. But I feel like it's a good thing that it's coming out on PlayStation with all the shit that they've added over the last, I don't know, like, 5 years. Like, I think that's a... It's, like, a... It is a strong package now.
Definitive edition, if you will.
Like, the Monkey Island stuff's really
cool. Yeah, but, like, there's like, proper kind of quest structure in there now. There's, like,
a there's, whole like, everything.
Like, P kind of arena mode. Yeah, there's so much in there. They've made, like, huge strides with that game. And it, like, you just... It's the kind of game that you get these, like, to Shannon's point, like, kind of TikTok sort of moments. Like, you can pull clips from it, or, like, the most insane stuff happening. People doing Battle with a Kraken, that kind of thing. And I can see that having this kind of new wave and there being, like, a second life to the game. But
don't it just you sort find depends that wild, if people though.
Put down what they're currently playing.
Like, that this could, like, it could take off and then just become so massive on PlayStation after being on Xbox for so many years. And I mean, I don't know. We'll see how it plays out.
Like, will it be cross? Is it cross-play with the existing platforms?
Yeah. they have announced that, yeah.
I think it's also worth highlighting
the strategy, really.
That it is a very different game to Skull and Bones. Mm. If anyone has played Skull and Bones, it's like, oh, I've had my fill of pirates. I feel like they are both very... different.
Yeah, one's a naval battle where, like, one, like Sea of Thieves is you are first person being a pirate and you're kind of relying on a crew to pilot the ship and
yeah.
It's a lot of fun. I really do hope people give it a go and it kind of gets a second wind with this. And likewise with Grounded, I feel like that's kind of coming out at an interesting time as well, because, like, survival games are kind of being popular again, like Power World's kind of coming back. Nightingale came out this week as well too, which I'm kind of interested to try out too. But Grounded is kind of unique in that it's this really kind of zany premise of being shrunken down kids lost in the backyard. And I'm sure people will have seen clips of, like, being attacked by spiders and stuff already being shared about there from people that have played it on PC and Xbox. But yeah, that's a game I loved. I played hours and hours and hours of Grounded, so hope
also has a full
finds that too.
Story now too, like a full campaign to play through with, like, boss battles and stuff. And I'm not somebody who likes survival games. Like, I think they're, like, real bad Zumba bait, but, like, I really liked Grounded. Like, I couldn't stop playing it from when I first got it, so I think it's worth a shot if you're keen, even if you're not normally keen on this kind of thing.
That's a really cool game. Excellent. All right, are we ready for a rapid-fire question then before we go to What the Wiki? The Borderlands trailer was released yesterday, featuring Kate Blanchett, Kevin Hart, Jack Black, Edgar Ramirez, Ariana Greenblatt, and Jamie Lee Curtis. Better not forget her. Are you yeah, meh, or nah on the film? That is my question, rapid-fire question for you all today. Harry, let's start with you. Having seen the trailer, where are you at?
I have. I'm a big meh at the moment.
Yeah. James?
Yeah, I'm like a meh, I think. I don't...
I thought you were a yeah, but you're a meh. Okay.
I had no emotional response to the trailer.
I think Kate Blanchett looks great, but and that's probably the only redeeming thing, but I'm very, very also meh.
Shannon?
Also meh. Meher than meh.
It just feels late.
Meh than meh.
Like...
Yeah, like 10 years ago, maybe. Now, maybe not.
And,
like,
the first Borderlands,
and the Borderlands comedy never, like, appealed to me anyway. So I'm kind of a meh, but I will probably go and see this, I reckon.
Jack Black might land okay.
No. I don't know, like, for Claptrap.
We always say that about Jack Black in anything. And
no,
I think you're a big Jack Black fan. Joke, and we were all, just, like, we were all positive about people watching him. And, yeah.
Mm.
Anyhow,
it's a hard one to pull off.
I feel like this filmed like 3 years ago, and they've just like kind of shelved it until then. Like, I feel like it's probably a disaster.
Trying to sell. Who directed it? Was in terms of like reshoots.
I think it's Robert Rodriguez, isn't it?
Oh, I thought it was Eli Roth.
I get them confused.
Yeah. But yes, it is Eli Roth. You're right. Yeah, they're like friends, so that's not like an unreasonable link.
Yeah.
Anyway,
all right. I think we've done a good job to keep that relatively rapid fire. So let's play What the Wiki, the Press Start podcast game show where the previous week's winner reads part of a Wikipedia page. I'm really struggling with this read today. For an unknown game in which the contestants must guess the game, a point is awarded for each correct guess with the round ending after someone's bagged themselves 2 points. James is currently in the lead on 8 points. Brody clean swept last week, so got the bonus point and shot up to 6 points in second place. Shannon and Kieran are tied in third with 3 points each. I'm bringing up the rear with just 2 points. And Harry, you'll be entering the leaderboard today with nil pois initially, but let's see if you can bag yourself a point today. Brody, as last week's winner, you are today's host. Take it away.
Oh, thank you, Ewan. All right, the first game. It retains much of the basic gameplay found in previous games, the game being primarily a shooter platformer. The player controls blank most of the time, with some sections using blank, as they explore various worlds to complete missions, using blank's wrench and other exotic weapons gained during the... Shannon.
Ratchet and Clank, up your arsenal.
It is not Ratchet and Clank, up your arsenal. As they explore various worlds to complete missions, and gain exotic weapons during the course of the game. At times, blank may enter freefall, or with
can
an upgrade.
Can you tell me when I'm back?
Ewan. Oh, why am I now blanking on what this game is called? Is it Ratchet and Clank's Rift Apart?
It is not Rift Apart.
Shannon, can I be back?
Not quite yet. At times, I'm just going to say names. Ratchet may enter freefall, or with an upgrade to Clank, will be able to fly. During these periods, the player uses the tilt functionality on the six-axis controller to maneuver Ratchet. That is the end of the paragraph. Shannon, are you having a crack?
I'll go again. Ratchet and Clank, tools of destruction.
That is correct. Well done, Shannon. Completely. I only picked it because it has a different name in other regions, and I didn't realize that. Apparently, it's Ratchet and Clank Future. Tools of Destruction.
I think there's a couple of them that have different names.
Yeah, I think it was Future here.
Deadlocked.
No, it was just Tools of Destruction.
You're not taking the point away from
in all countries. No. Just a fun fact, if you will. All right, Shannon on one. Everyone else on nil pois. Okay. The game features a philosophical storyline. The name of the game refers to a fictional philosophical principle formulated by the fictional Greek philosopher known as Straton of Stagira. In texts found in the game, Straton argues that the consciousness of blank of Greek mythology implies that humans are also merely machines, albeit James. Biological ones. James.
Is it the Talos effect?
It's not the Talos effect.
Ewan.
No.
Shannon.
Ewan. Ewan was first.
Is it Talos principle?
It is the Talos principle.
Oh my god, I'm so stupid.
Thank you, James. Thank you. Yeah.
Oh dear.
Embarrassing.
That's a whiff. That's a big whiff. Okay. Game 3. He is fuming about that. Game 3. The game's development began in 2006. Originally, it was set to be a first-person Kinect-only title for the Xbox 360. However, the developer gradually redesigned the game
Ewan.
To become... Christ, Ewan.
Oh, fuck. Is this Huge. Rise? What's the rest of it called?
James, I'm queuing.
Hang on. Well, yeah,
I can't remember what the rest of it's called. Fuck.
That's a shame.
Oh, James, I guess it's only fair. You gave me the last one.
James. Nah.
Is it Rise, Son of Rome?
It is Rise, Son of Rome. That's a good pull, though.
I knew
That's
Rome was in
pull.
This somewhere. I just wow. Fuck. All right. You We're even, James.
Okay. Game number 4, I think we're at. Okay. Where to start on this one?
Fuck.
I don't know where to start. It's a very small wiki, so I've got to be very careful here. It was officially revealed in March 2016... Prior to the game's announcement, three different experiences were created as a tech demo. Only the London heist level allows the use of
James.
The... James.
Oh, no.
Ewan.
Oh, no. Ewan is queued up.
Is it PlayStation VR Worlds?
It is PlayStation VR Worlds.
I would have missed the VR. I would have said PlayStation Worlds. Yeah. So, well done, James.
Well done, Thanks. James.
Oh, he's climbed Cements up to 10 points. Couldn't keep points. Him at wow. bay.
Can't wait till he goes away for that month.
Yeah, thank God for that month. Shannon has climbed up into a solid third place, though, so he's on 4 points, and I've moved up to tie with Kieran on 3, which does unfortunately leave Harry on nilpoir, but at least I get to say nilpoir again. I've not been able to do that for the longest time, and it's really been stressing me out. But with that, let's bring an end to what was this week's episode of the Press Start podcast. Subscribe to us on Listener or the podcast service of your choice. Follow us at press.au and visit the site at pressstart.com.au. We've been joined today by Brody.
Thank you. You can follow me on most things at Brody_DG.
We were also joined by James.
Yes, we were. You can find me on X at James, @JAMZ.
We also had Shannon.
Yeah, you can follow me at Shannon Grixty on everything.
And joining us with his review of Final Fantasy VII Rebirth, it was Harry.
Yeah, you can follow me at Harry_Callow. Go read the review. There's lots of stuff in there that we didn't talk about today. So,
I had a sneak peek as well, and you've packed in like loads of screenshots as well.
It is enormous.
I've been your host, Ewan Roxburgh. You can follow me on socials at Ewan_Roxburgh. Thanks again for tuning in, and until next time, happy gaming.
Bye.
Bye. Bye. Bye.